next guest is never been on before. They're truly unique, truly very important. And many people who come on, it wouldn't be out of the ordinary to say that they risk a lot, maybe even their life. And this next guest has risked a lot to tell her story, first to deal with her own horrific situation, and then only to come find out how it is a worldwide horrific situation, and specifically America in the crosshairs. We're talking to former sister Carrie Bernor. She is a Catholic nun, Carrie Bernor. Her website, clergyvictim.com, I had trouble. Catherine was able to get on. I couldn't even get on the website. I mean, if that tells you anything, yeah, that's what we're talking about. She has videos where she talks about clergy victims. Her book is coming out. This is a very important story. It may be a little difficult for, you know, if you got certain sensitive ears, you may kind of, I don't know how deep, we're going to try not to get too deep, but a very important issue we'll address today. Sister Carrie, welcome to the Power Hour.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Why don't you, I don't want to get too much in your history and your whole story, because we could talk literally for hours. I want to get a little deeper. Just briefly tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to understand and know the things that we'll discuss later.
Absolutely. And for those who want a deeper, look into that, my story in comprehensive detail, it's available on my YouTube channel, Sister Carrie Bernor, and also the website. Hopefully it is functioning. It seems to be. If you use a DuckDuckGo search, it tends to work out better. www.clergyvictim.com, transforming victims into victors. So basically, it all starts when I ended up converting to the Roman Catholic Church. I had definitely fallen in love with it at an early age of the age of 15 years old, due to its ancientness and due to its beauty. And, of course, in that process, people found it rather strange, a young individual like myself becoming Catholic in order to become a nun, because I had a connection to Christ where I asked God to reveal who he was, and he certainly did when I was 9 years old. And in the course of this interaction with Christ, this realization hit me, well, whoever this is, this Christ, this is the one I want to marry. And it was comical because growing up, I looked at the movies and saw, oh, well, nuns are brides of Christ. I guess I have to go over there and become Roman Catholic. So that's exactly what I did. So in high school, I basically connected to a church, and my friend John and a bunch of others at this church named St. Joseph Church in Charlton. And immediately, right away, the priest was so, he was just excited that there was someone young who had a calling on their life to become a nun. So straight away after my conversion, which happened in April, I graduated high school, which was somewhere in May of the year of 1993. And then June 13th, I went right into the convent in Still River, Massachusetts, called St. Benedict's Center. And basically, they were unique. They had a nice blend of Benedictine spirituality mixed in with Jesuit. And, of course, back then, I had no idea that Jesuits were bad. I thought they were kind of cool and really smart people. So, because their founders, of the order was Father Leonard Feeney and Sister Goddard Clark. So I went in and spent maybe 5 years, give or take. Now, keeping in mind that Roman canon law does not allow for anyone to become a nun right away. They wait 2 years after this quote-unquote honeymoon season. And there is some wisdom in that. So I basically spent the summers at the convent while attending college. After that, I ended up going straight away into joining. I became a postulant, spent, 6 or 8 months doing that. And if those who want a deeper aspect into my story, you can go to the website, like I said, but go down. There's a book that's for free there. The book is written from my birth up until 2008, so it doesn't cover a lot of the stuff after 2008, of course. It's called Divine Challenge, and it's going to give you much, much more detail. But basically, at this point, I'm in the convent. I'm loving it. I'm fitting in. It's really a beautiful interaction. We get to do all the Latin prayers, the old way, the Tridentine Mass. So I fit right in and loved it. We did farming in the summer, you know, of course, all year round, of course, once I joined. And so I went through the postulancy program, which basically means that you become a candidate. Postulant comes from the word asking. And then after that, I became a novice, and I spent maybe 2 or something years as a novice. In the course of my novitiate formation, some spiritual things ended up happening to me where I couldn't just keep ignoring these proddings. At first, I thought they were just temptations, they were distractions, but then I brought it to my superior, Mother Teresa Benaway, and she agreed that we should take this pretty seriously, so she gave me an extra hour to pray in the chapel a day for a whole year so that I could come up with, is this my calling? Do I leave the order? Do I go become a hermit? In canon law of the 83 provision, there is a code, 603, where one who's aspiring to become a hermit, they have to basically, build their life. They have to become responsible, get their own little place, get their own health insurance. Now, this is not what was typical in line with the earliest hermits that existed in Christianity, as is expressed in the Orthodox faith. This isn't something that, you know, the earliest, you know, fathers and mothers of the church ever expressed, but in Romanism, in the Roman Catholic Church, this was the way I was taught that, you know, I had to become responsible and do all those things, which I was cool with. That was totally cool with me. So I went out, and keep in mind, when I joined the convent, I didn't have any life experience. So then I ended up leaving the convent with the mother's blessing, Mother Teresa's blessing, and the order. And I ended up going right back to my hometown, which was Spencer, Massachusetts, and stayed with my uncle and aunt for about 3 months or so. And I was so pleased because they weren't far away from a monastery. It was called St. Joseph's Abbey in Spencer, Massachusetts, where I could attend liturgies daily if I wanted. And, of course, I wanted to. I hadn't missed Mass in like 10 years. I mean, I was every day going to church. And it was just my way of being connected to Christ through the thing they call Holy Communion. So now I go through, I'm at this monastery, I'm now working, you know, jobs, I've got maybe 2 or 3 jobs, UPS, I had wire store, you know, basic, you know, menial things to just make a living. And in the course of that, I was also going hardcore with reading tons of spiritual books. And so I ended up connecting with the monks there at St. Joseph's Abbey, to which ultimately, there's a long story behind it, but ultimately they felt that a calling like mine deserved some kind of guidance, that if I was feeling connected to the Cistercian spirituality, which is what they were expressing, they were actually Cistercian, that I should in fact, you know, get guidance from them. So ultimately I was given a priest for spiritual advisement. His name was Father Dennis O'Brien from Shrewsbury. And we went for a couple years and did our process, and it was kind of cool. It was unfolding a lot of progress. And I was navigating myself in the world at the same time building my spiritual life. And towards the point, for the purposes of after 6 years of this formation period, you're supposed to, you know, prove that you can live the lifestyle of a hermit, which is heavy work and heavy prayer. Mostly prayer, that's really what your goal is, not to run away from the world, but to pray for the world in union with the church. So this point, everything I'm feeling like connecting, and I'm getting all the things done on the checklist, so to speak. And now I run into a situation where I'm invited to a celebration of a monk getting his final vows, which is like, you know, basically his marriage vows, right? So I go in, and I ended up running into a priest that wrote a book that I was reading. The priest's name was Father Joseph Tukong, and he wrote a book called The Contemplative Experience, and I was totally, you know, involved in this writing of his. I really found it to be very deep. So I stopped him, or rather we ended up stopping each other in the hallway to greet one another, because we've talked before in the past, and he was always supportive of my calling. And so he said, well, I'd love to sit down and talk with you about your book. And it just so happens I'm on retreat this week. So I ended up going in. speaking with him, and we spoke for maybe an hour and a half or so. All the details are in my book. This was years ago. So bottom line is, in the end of the course of this discussion with the priest, I mean, he was talking a lot about women's breasts and quoting Song of Songs, chapter 1, verse 12. Or he just kept going on about breasts. So I was like, well, I guess he's got a thing about it, but who am I to judge? I'm just here to learn and get spiritual advisement. So at this stage, at the end of the meeting with the priest, he lunges out and grabs my left breast. Now, this is really not good for me, because all the energy I put into becoming a nun, becoming a hermit, connecting myself to St. Joseph's Abbey, particularly because of the spirituality, as is written, when you're a hermit, you're supposed to anchor yourself to a specific spirituality. Jean Baer, the SJ Jesuit, writes very comprehensively about that. So now I'm at an impasse. I'm like, I'm in a situation. I put all my eggs in one basket. What do I do? So I waited. I was still on retreat. I didn't react. I waited for Brother Philippe Macron to get on duty, a friend of mine who's also a monk at St. Joseph's Abbey. And I told him what happened. And we sat up all night till like 3 a.m. and we discussed the whole thing. And bottom line, he said, I have to confide in you. That you were basically, there was a plan to find a way to get rid of you. And so he said the best way to avoid this is don't say anything. And furthermore, if you do bring an allegation forward, the Abbey will hurt you very badly. And I said, I don't take well to threats. And so he said, just try to, you know, don't acknowledge it. Just, you know, don't, you know, just go on your life. Don't get involved. And I said, okay, I'm going to try that. And I talked to Brother Patrick the following day, a friend of mine also of the same Abbey, who also said, yeah, the best thing for you to do is just, you know, we could talk. We're your friends. We'll talk with you. But don't bring this to the authorities, because they're really not, it's going to be bad. It's going to be really bad for you. So I said, all right, I don't want to lose my place praying at this wall. I don't want to lose my vocation that I fought so hard for all those years, you know, for 3 years. And then prior to that, you know, trying to discern. And so at this point, I ended up meeting with a nun about 2 months later. And the nun, I told her the story. She said, oh, no, this happened to someone else. And she couldn't tell me the name.
There's the music. First break with Sister Carrie. On the other side, we're going to get into, you know, they tried to abuse you, or they did abuse you. And then... what that led to for you, and what you discovered, and down this rabbit hole. This is the real important journey that you went on and are here for. We'll be back after this. ClergyVictim.com is our website. Divine Challenge is the book. Stay tuned. Continue on. We've got about 4.5 minutes in this segment. Sister Carrie, kind of just, you know, put the bows on this and transition of how you went down the rabbit hole and led to what we'll talk about later.
Absolutely, absolutely. Bottom line, with me, my meeting with the other nun, I found out others were being attacked, okay, by the same priest. And then later down the road, I found out there were many, many other more victims of the Abbey, with several of the monks in there. Then the point is, the thing went, my matter went to a criminal court. This whole court case was literally set up. And so I lost the court case. The case was botched. I have evidence of that. I went and complained to the Board Bar of Overseers about Anthony Marotta complying with the wishes of the Roman Church on this matter. The DA's office was complicit. There's a case, Mary T. Jean versus Massachusetts State Police, evidencing the Vatican and Massachusetts politics. And then it ended up, I served for 7 years as an advocate for clergy abuse. And the clergy abuse never stayed in the sexual abuse arena. It went straight away into murder, straight away into satanic abuse, straight away into a bigger policy. I ended up finding out that not only Massachusetts politics were hinged with this Vatican influence, But then it actually went to an entire study from 2000, like I said, 2003 up until, you know, present day. It's still ongoing. I ended up finding out that there was a policy in place that Romanism basically took over our armed forces, all branches of government. And this was a policy that's been in place, you know, going all the way back to 1933, you know, with the Franklin Delano Roosevelt's, you know, passing of the act there, the Emergency Banking Relief Act.
With the War Powers Act. Okay.
That's correct.
This is very big. Let me summarize, and you just, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. Basically, you had a desire, the spirituality really attracted you, of being a nun, different convents. You became a postulate. As you went forward, eventually you faced abuse. It turned into many other victims. You stood up for yourself, stood up for other people, went to a court case. The court case was railroaded, to say the least. You then became an advocate for clergy abuse, or not advocate for, but advocate to help people who are victims of clergy abuse. And as you began to do that, you began to see that, look, this isn't just, you know, some perverted sexual priest isolated situation. This is a much, much, much bigger situation, and the rabbit hole goes deeper than you could have ever imagined. Was that accurate?
Absolutely correct. To the point where I exposed St. Joseph's Abbey as a cover for the CIA, which is all evidenced on my website, military-grade nanotechnology. That's on the page on my website, Clergy Victim. You can click on there and you'll get all that information. Bottom line, St. Joseph's Abbey had a founder named J. Peter Grace. J. Peter Grace was in charge or part of MKUltra. He's also part of MKDelta, which was chemical and biological warfare programs. So the bottom line is we have all these German Nazis trying to evade the Nuremberg trials, and we got J. Peter Grace working with our quasi, quote-unquote, government, which wasn't, in my eyes, in your eyes, it's not our government. Okay, these people came in and took over. They turned the Trading with the Enemy Act of 1917 from enemies without to enemies within. So the word was changed, and I can readily give you that reference point so you can give that to your viewers on your website. But the bottom line is it says, by virtue of the authority vested in me, Section 5 of the Act of October 16, 2017, as amended by the Act of March 9, 1933. Why are they not being honest about the Act of October 6, 1917? There was one word that was changed in the Trading with the Enemy Act into the Emergency Banking Relief Act. Franklin Damnable Roosevelt turned us into the enemies that are described in the Trading with the Enemy Act. So this is one of the nets that was cast over America, and this is all proven. Eric John Phelps can prove it in his book, Vatican Assassins, also on 247worldradio.com. He has a several-volume case course that you can take, and it proves how the Jesuits completely took over all of our systems since this time, and even how they tried to build it up to that point. And then the two court cases passed on 1938, rendering all courts now no longer capable of common law. They can't administer that. And after you can't administrate that, then what do you have left? Military lay, overlay. Military overlay, meaning in Winthrop's, the book, Winthrop's Military Law and Precedent.
There's the music. We'll continue this on the other side. You can. How many guests do we come on? Just first-rate guests talk about 1933, talking about the War Powers Act, Trading with the Enemies Act, that key point in American history, the split of our republic, our divine republic, into this basically Roman canon law. You know, turning you into a beast. We'll be on the other side. Clergyvictim.com. Stay tuned. Ladies and gentlemen, we're here because of your energy, your purchases, your donations, what have you. ThePowerMall.com. Please consider and buy from the good guys, because it allows us to bring people like Sister Carrie here and this information. We are not here unless you buy things from us, unless you donate money to us, unless your energy, your prayers go with us. So that's why we're here. So please continue to ThePowerMall.com, ThePowerMall.com. We talked about the specials last hour. We don't want to go into that and take more time from Sister Carrie, but ThePowerMall.com, 877-817-9829, 877-817-9829. Getting back to Sister Carrie. I think it's important, audience, you understand, there's been roughly nine attempts. Say roughly, maybe it's more. Maybe there's been others that we don't. She's nine documented attempts on her life that she is still here and she's still ticking. She has risked everything. What more could she risk to bring you this information. And in if you're looking for justification of her credentials, if you're looking about more details about her specific history, please go check out the website, clergyvictim.com. Maybe another time when she comes on, we'll go to it. We're going to try to really hit home what the core important knowledge that she has that is much deeper, that only she is really qualified to give us. And if you want the other stuff, you can go back on her website, clergyvictim.com. Her new book, Divine Challenge, is will be coming out hardcover or in a physical copy soon. So, Sister Carrie, in a previous interview, I heard you say, quite shockingly to me, not shockingly, but wow, it was just like really bold. You said that the Vatican is not run by the Pope and his cardinals at all. What did you say?
Basically, that the influences that the Pope and the cardinals are subjected to, they are basically answering to the demonic realm directly. And so there are books out there, Exovacuum.
What does that mean? Let me interject. I mean, you're basically saying Lucifer's running the Vatican. I mean, explain that. We hear stuff like that. What does that mean? They conjure spells, demons come out. What does that mean?
They're absolutely involved in satanic worship and all of that. That Malachi Martin was absolutely correct. There is a key for his book, The Windswept House, where the key actually discloses the real names of the prelates. The prelates are involved at the highest levels. So they really, at the highest levels, they are satanic. You know, they worship Satan. They worship Lucifer. So that's something that's not new. A lot of people know that. I mean, Leo Zagami's been all over the, you know, everywhere on the internet showing how the Vatican is basically demon possessed. You know, he knows this because the lead exorcist for the Vatican at the time when he was alive was also pretty much tampering in the demonic realm. And hanging out with people like Zechariah Sitchin and all of this. The bottom line is they have an agenda, and their agenda is to hybridize all of humanity through the use of nanotech and other similar covert technologies. That's what their goal is. And so if they hybridize us through the collateralization of our birth certificates, which an FBI agent asked me, do you believe the Pope owns us all through the collateralization of our birth certificates? The purpose why he asked me that is because he wanted to hire me, which I didn't know until years later. The point is if they're hybridizing us on paper, now they want to, through biotech, hybridize us for another purpose. And the purpose is to quote-unquote, improve humanity. There's a wonderful DVD by Skywatch TV series, Inhuman, the Next and Final Phase of Man is Here. And what they want to do is take us away from our being natural people, you know, mankind, and turn us into artificial entities. So in the real life, and not just on paper, not just in the birth certificate, but in the physical format, okay? Just like the angels fell from their first estate, they're trying to have mankind, us, fall from our estate and allow their jurisdiction to cover us through this quantum nonsense that they're trying to pull over us. So this is heavy.
What you just said is so, what you just said, is, and you put it, I mean, I've heard things similar to this. What you just said, the way you put it, was so profound. My God. You just talked about, and it just hit me. I mean, I just had an epiphany when we're talking here. They've already hybridized us on paper. You know, through a straw man, through our birth certificate, through the Social Security Act, separating us from our republic where we are sovereign. Why do you think this is so important, ladies and gentlemen? Why do you think I've been screaming about the Christian churches? Where are they on all this? They've already hybridized you on paper. And what Sister Carrie is telling you, now they want to hybridize you, make you lose your estate physically. Actually in person, not the straw man anymore, not the government entity. And for all of you who say, well, this doesn't matter, I'll just live my life, you can no longer sit on the sideline and live your life and think that this is going to go by. The war is on, and the war is for you to lose your estate. My God, Sister Carrie, continue right on that line.
And the estate is eternal in nature, okay? So with these nanotechnology, the biotech and all this other stuff they're doing, that's actually their goal with the Mark of the Beast is essentially to upgrade you to an AI system, so to the point where you lose your humanity. You're no longer a mankind. You're no longer human, okay? Which means Christ only died for mankind. He didn't die for anyone else that we know of. Okay? And the Book of Enoch is very clear that, you know, mankind is the one that God is moving towards to for salvation, for the purposes of saving them. So the bottom line is if we're being attacked in this manner, we have to understand why. Why do they want our humanity? Why do they want to take that away from us? Because we're the only ones who can be saved by Christ's blood. And so, yes, these other churches are waking up. There is Sid Roth and Tom Horn and Chris Putnam and L.A. Marzulli and Skywatch TV and Josh Peck. That whole group of people is taking it big time. Steve Quayle, they're all completely exposing this stuff in their series, the True Legends DVD series and their conferences. And they have, like, secular scientists who already were involved in AI getting up and screaming at the Christians saying, we need your help. You're the only ones who seem to be wanting to listen. Our humanity is going to be laid waste. It's going to be gone. So we need to stand up against this. And so this is very, very serious. This is a direct attack against our salvation, our eternal estate, not just physical here, not just in this realm to chip us and not have us buy and sell.
All right, let me summarize again, and you correct me if I'm wrong. Basically, the power, the divinity that is placed on mankind, I don't like to use the word human because that denotes, even legally in the 1800s, that was a human is a monster, is a beast. Human is a beast, a talking cow. Mankind is what God endowed. Man was endowed by God. I'd like to differentiate a little bit. So basically, mankind was gifted with a crown of divinity, of glory, of whatever, a divine right, of the state, by God, and now Lucifer, demonic realms, want to take that power and encapsulate it, capture it, and fence it in and use the energy, use that power to glorify themselves and to raise themselves, try to raise themselves above God by doing it. And what the battle line then becomes our will, and they need our will to do it. Would all that be accurate?
Absolutely. And human comes from two words, humus and man. In Black 6, I think it was the edition you're citing from, the people who wrote the laws are the ones who are saying humans are monsters. It's not that we are monsters, but you're right. In terms of biblically, mankind is the better way to approach that. But yeah, you're absolutely right. They're trying to harvest us on every single level, and they're trying to, you know, basically have us go to the world as it existed before mankind existed on this earth. Before it existed, which is Atlantis, Lemuria, all these other pre-civilizations that existed prior to the Bronze Age. So, you know, what are they trying to do? Well, they don't like us being here because in the scripture, when we read the scripture, it says God's giving mankind dominion over the earth. Well, these beings were here before us and they hate us. They want us out of here. So they're going to have us buy into this stupid nonsense program here with this, machine, you know, integrate to the machine and lose your whole being at the same time.
Would it be accurate, again, I alluded to it, it seems like we have power over them, we have dominion over them, and by trickery, by ignorance, by whatever, they're taking away our knowledge, and then we are then have to willfully give into the system to give them power. Would that be accurate?
Yes, they operate on tacit acquiescence. So if we don't stand up and say, absolutely not, in the name of Jesus, you have no right over me, my family, my home, my possessions, my goods, my lands. If we don't stand up and do that on every single level, I mean, they're putting nanotech in the food. And that's all, that centerforfoodandsafety.com or .org or whatever it is has a whole list of all the foods that have nanotech in it. And frankly, people have been criticizing a little bit, which is good. I'm glad that people are searching things through. But I cited a document from allegedly from the Department of Defense. It was sent to me by a DOD card-carrying government official, and this is in 2013.
My word, what a story. We're only scratching the surface. I mean, I'm talking to her on a break. We have to have her on again soon. She's going to send the documents to Catherine. We're going to create a video of this interview, and so then you can see the documents right on the screen. Very powerful. Quickly, Sister Carrie, tie up about the nano and your experience there, and then we'll move on.
bottom line, Nano Domestic called the document, whether it's real or not, to me, I believe there's something that is real because I went through the list of all of the dispersals that were in Pepsi-Cola, Nestle, as it's listed on here, Coca-Cola, Danone. And I went through and looked in 2013, captured the screen captures, and it shows that Center for Food and Safety does show that nanotech is in those foods. So why would a DOD document lie about that? When in fact it's true, and there's a separate body of another entity that's found out that truth. Another aspect is I was literally, let's just say, threatened, and it was, the man did say, you know, if I wanted to kill you, I could, and under FISA, I could hold you indefinitely. And I said, bottom line, I gave you all my documents. You have everything. So if there's something classified, you need to take care of it. You have the means to do such. So I was threatened over this document. Whether it's true or not, the point is there's enough records in here and information to show that the material in it is true, that there is nano in the foods. And why? Because
well,
of the
we must, well, well, we must know about Pepsi specifically. There was a big case. Their stockholders, they were putting aborted fetus cells in their drinks. I think that maybe they still are. I don't know. They've kind of hushed that up, but that was definitely going on. We're running out of time. As you look at politically what's going on, Trump seems to always be in the middle of everything. As you look at it, obviously you probably see it from a different perspective. Is this the same battle we're seeing going on with Trump and the deep state?
Absolutely. Trump knows exactly what's going on. I sent correspondence to him, and within 5 days he responded to, in terms of, let's just put it this way, I was on the run for 5 years in my own country, and now I can't get into major detail, but I am now safe, okay? So Obama definitely had a list, and the list was to get rid of Christians, libertarians, nationalists, and it was under directive, so I can tell you Obama was evil, flat out, and I have enough evidence that I just have the evidence to prove that. So Kay Griggs also, if you want to know further how and where the Roman Church came and took over our armed forces and military and all the other levels, you can look at Kay Griggs, and she gets into an interview on YouTube where she exposes how the Jesuits totally took over our systems. She was married to
a colonel.
Colonel. Yeah. I was trying to find the guy's name, but it's July 25th, 2005 by Greg Szymanski. She's right there. That whole article describes it, how Kager's former Marine colonel wife talks again about military assassin squads, drug running, illegal weapons deals, sexual perversion within the highest levels of U.S. military and government. The other thing is people complaining. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely.
People complain that Trump went to Fordham University. Well, if you look closely, there was a mutual, let's say, disgust with each other. And if you read Trump's tweets about it, he basically said that I left there because you're a bunch of idiots and I'm out of there. He didn't finish out his schooling there. He's not a Jesuit. He's fighting it, and the Pope hates his guts. So if we look closer into this and really look deeply, there might be Knights of Malta that are standing on the side of Trump, but those Knights of Malta are actually at war with the Pope because they know the Pope, to the point where the Pope was trying to dissolve their passports, the Knights of Malta's passports and their status. And they changed the Jesuit and put him in control of the Knights of Malta. So this goes very
deep.
Let me
just quickly about the wrap up about Trump. You feel confident that Trump, so how do you feel confident that Trump knows about this battle that's going on and he is fighting against it? You feel confident in that?
100% he's fighting with every fiber of his being. And as evidenced on December 7th, he just came out with another wonderful executive order, you know, for against the porn on these black websites and all. So the point is when we go to whitehouse.gov, go to the Excel spreadsheet, download all of his executive orders, and look at what he's done. He is trying to bring our constitutional republic back. That's why they hate him so much. There's no other president that's been so hated ever except for him. So I'm not saying he's perfect. He's one person. He's one man. But if we all do our own parts, what he's trying to do for the people is bring back truth and mankind and real law, like the truth. He's trying to clean it all out, but he's only one. and he's got to deal with Congress. He's got to deal with, there's too many moving variables that he has to deal with. But that which he is doing.
And where are the churches on this? Where are the churches on this? I'm so sick of these do-nothing churches. Just, oh, well, brother, let's just feel good. And all they're doing is diminishing our God-given fervor. You know, real men of God are like, have a sword. And this is the time for the sword. This is the time for...
There's a lot of churches that are preaching the truth about all this. Like Sid Roth, like I said, you know, he's up there and he's talking about aliens in the Vatican, meaning demons in the Vatican. And that's a huge thing. Go on YouTube and watch it. The church, the mainstream is waking up. Back then when I was going through the nano attacks 9 times on my life, weaponized nanotechs, military grade attacks. When I was going through that whole thing, I thought all Christians just didn't get it, and I was in the wrong group of people because they were just not that smart. No, 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 they really do get it. There are Christians that know this stuff is happening and it's real. So go to Skywatch TV, connect to that.
Let me ask you about, we just have a little time. Obviously, there's a lot of gaps. Really, we probably open more questions than answer them. solutions. Let's talk about solutions. Somebody who's listening at home, their jaw might be on the floor. I don't know. This is so big. Solutions.
Bottom line, clergyvictim.com, second tab down, My Story from Targeted to Free, Love is the Answer. We're featuring pre-orders for DVD. You're welcome to purchase. If I spent $400,000 on my remedy while I was on the run getting away, and I'm no longer emitting signals, and I no longer have weaponized nanotech in my body. So I'm the only one who's alive, the only person that's alive to talk about the remedy, and that's the first DVD of the series that's just come out. And so you're welcome to go there, clergyvictim.com, My Story from Targeted to Free, Love is the Answer. That's going to actually help many, many people that are targeted and who've never, ever had the opportunity to become free. And I'm going to show them how to become free. I just don't have many hours in the day, so I can't do consulting. So I have to make the DVD so people can do it themselves.
People at home and, I can't believe, but it's just surprising. How many people ask this question about school, the public school system? How crucial is it that that either gets abolished, people get out of it? What's your feeling there?
Well, again, in the affidavit that Dr. Hildegard Scaniger wrote regarding my matter on clergy victims, it's clear that children are...
Oh, it's cutting out. Get you there, sister?
Yes.
Yeah, the music's cutting out. You're on Skype, that's why. Try to talk. You got about 10 seconds. Try to encapsulate in 10 seconds if you can.
The God is faithful.
Next time we'll have you on again, Sister Carrie. It's just been an absolute pleasure. Sister Carrie Bernor, her site is clergyvictim.com. Divine Challenge is the book. This is a big area. Ladies and gentlemen, you're right in the middle of eternity. Right here. The crown's on you, and somebody's coming for it. Okay? And God's with you. Are you with God? God bless you. What have you done for your republic this week? Ask yourself that question. God bless you. Talk to you next week. See ya.
Imagine a cold winter blowing outside, yet you are warm and cozy inside with economic, safe, comfortable heating thanks to your Sunair ductless furnace. The Sunair ductless furnace provides your home with comfortable, radiant electric heat that stays near the floor where you are, not on the ceiling where you aren't. It's simple to operate and the most energy efficient furnace in the world, heating up to 500 square feet for about $1 a day. Sunair heaters and purifiers are made in America and built to last. To order, call the Power Mall at 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. Hi, it's Catherine from the Power Hour. If you are one of the many millions of people who have difficulty falling asleep, staying asleep, or having unrestful sleep throughout the night, REM sleep could be the solution you've been searching for. If you are like me and are afraid of the dangerous side effects from prescription sleep aids, REM sleep is an all-natural alternative that contains ingredients research has shown to help improve and enhance better sleep. REM sleep will get you the deep sleep you need to feel your best and will ensure you wake up feeling energized. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today.